Now, a week ago, out of nowhere, Kendrick Lamar's new album, GNX, came into the world, and he is not the first one to do it, but because of this, we had to ask arts journalist Chris Walzer to come in and look at the pros and cons of the surprise album. Chris, you were very welcome along to the show.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Thank you so much for coming in, because we've got a lot to dissect here, right? We did mention the pros and the cons there, obviously, but let's start with GNX. What happened last week, and how has this gone down?
Yeah, last Friday night, Kendrick Lamar just surprised the hell out of everybody. His fans, music critics that wouldn't have been ready, thought they had filed away the last of that week's reviews.
Yeah.
But then Kendrick Lamar posted a 30-second teaser on YouTube saying that a new album, GNX, was on the way, named after, and I know nothing about cars, but named after a car. 30 minutes after that, we had the album.
No time in between.
So you had a case where, as I said, critics were just rushing to have the first reviews, which I think are sometimes like there were reviews posted this album within 2 or 3 hours. I don't think that's enough time to actually sit with
digest
an album. And also go through the lyrics and go through like who's involved in the production, everything. And you also had fans pouring over those lyrics, because we haven't had an album proper from Kendrick Lamar in about 2 years.
But
we've had singles, and we've had some diss tracks aimed at, you know, Drake. Very famous feud there, and has been for like the last like 12, 13 years. So you had a case where it's like, what are all of these songs about?
Yeah.
Who was involved? Jack Antonoff was actually involved, and he was involved in some other surprise albums, which we'll get to. That is one way to, you know, surprise everyone, to, you know, to stop the music industry, to kind of just have all eyes on you. And it seems to have worked, because in its first day alone, you had a case where on Spotify, you had 44.2 million streams in just one day.
What?
Yeah. And we'll know for sure. We'll know tonight now how that translates into chart positions, let's say. And then next Tuesday, we'll know if it's a big seller in America when the Billboard Hot 200 charts are released. So a big week for Kendrick.
It is a great way to go about it, and it's quite interesting because, you know, they obviously trying to push music, and there's so much of it. If you are doing a lot of advertising, and then it's like, okay, it's not dropping for a month, it's not dropping for this. You know, people are kind of like, oh, whatever. But this is like, because people always want to have the first thing, they're like, oh, this is the whole thing in full. I know exactly what's going on. So it's a lot. Let's talk about Radiohead. Let's bring it back to 2007. That was one of the first lots that people remember of a surprise album.
Yeah, I think so. I was thinking about this. Like, the world looked so different in 2007, and it just seems like yesterday. But the music industry was very different in 2007, because you had a case where people, bands, artists, publishers, labels, they were all getting used to, you know, the internet and using that as a tool to release music, and also trying to avoid, people from stealing their music. How do you kind of just like bypass all of that? You put out a secret album, or you put out a surprise album. So Radiohead didn't drop an album on, you know, they didn't, you know, put up a message online and say the album's available today. What they did was
online sound didn't exist at the time, though.
It's so strange. It's only 2007. Colin Greenwood, Johnny Greenwood, the members of Radiohead, they set up a website called thisisrainbows.com, and they left a message on it saying, hi, we're Radiohead. We've been secretly recording a new album. It'll be available here within 10 days. On top of that, you can come back here in 10 days and download it, and you can pay what you want for it. You can pay £10, you can pay £20. If you want to just take it for free, take it for free. Now, I understand that an awful lot of Radiohead fans did not take it for free, but I'd say some of them were just throwing a couple of quid in.
An honesty box for the eggs.
It's a little bit like that, yeah. And they were asked a ton of questions at the time. Why are you doing this? What's behind this? Well, there were two things. They didn't have a label at the time, because I think a label would have shut that down straight away. And they had been in the studio for so long that they just thought, we're finished the album. Now it would take months of faffing about. It would take months of like promotion and interviews and talk. It's all very expensive. It's all very, you know, it's an awful lot of time wasting. Let's just skip that entirely, and let's get ahead of those regulated TV and radio lists where, you know, we have to put out a single and we have to sing a single track. Let's just put the whole thing out in 10 days.
Looking back at that now, like, and it probably wasn't the thought process at the time, but it means that there's a deeper connection with your fans, because it means that you're all about the music and you're not about the money.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if there had been some money men in the room when that decision was being made,
it wasn't gonna happen.
By the managers, they probably would have ended up in hospital.
Which, again, artists need to make money and should make money.
Yeah,
I need to make that very clear.
I mean, you are coming from a place of privilege a little bit if you can afford to put out an album this big and not really worry about, you know, the commercial success of it. But it was commercially successful. It did top the Irish charts, the UK charts, the US charts. So that tells you that people were buying this thing. And it also launched a new era for Radiohead and a very successful world tour. So it was a bit of a risk, but it paid off.
Yeah. Let's talk about Beyonce. Was it like 2016? She kind of got pushed into bringing out a surprise album.
Yeah. She was putting out an album, her fourth album titled Four, in 2011. And about 3-4 weeks before that album was released, the whole album was leaked in its entirety. And she put out a statement at the time saying, what? You know, who did this? Why would you want to do this? People who are listening to it, you know, just wait until the actual release date. Mm-hmm. So that was at the start of June. The album then came out at the end of June, and it did. It affected record sales at the time. So for her next studio trick, she decided, I'm going to tell a very small group of people, and they're all going to have to sign maybe NDAs, and we're going to work on this album in secret. Yeah. And I'm also going to give the record label a bunch of false release dates. And then, but you know, she obviously has to work with them closer to 100%, the release time.
Yeah.
But about a week before this album was coming out, and we didn't know it was coming out, they locked in a release. They locked in like an online promotional campaign so that they could kick off the whole thing. December 13th, like 2013, I think it was. So yeah, a couple weeks before Christmas, in the middle of the night, Beyonce's self-titled album just landed on iTunes. So anyone who was up, anyone who was listening, they would have seen, oh my God, there's a whole new Beyonce album here. Within 3 days, it was the fastest selling album in iTunes store history, top charts all over the world. It was a huge success. And it was actually the beginning of a new, you know, she did it again, sort of with Lemonade, which, I mean, to pull that off once is an achievement. To pull it off twice, just magic. But she has started now to kind of adapt, not the very traditional method of kind of, you know, single, lots of promotion for a few months and then the album. But she has started to go back to kind of teasing stuff out, not just surprising us with.
Because she can do that.
Yeah,
this was one of my favourite songs off the Lemonade album, which was Formation.
Yeah.
Obviously. I was like, I remember listening like that, panic listening through the album at that time, being like, oh my God, because it's just arrived, and hearing this song, and I was like, love it. Okay, like lots of things in music, David Bowie was one of the trailblazers in surprise albums. Do you have to be a big name to do it?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You need, as I said, you kind of have to, you're in a privileged position if you're doing this, you know, and you're maybe financially comfortable and you can afford to take this sort of risk. So we're not looking at, you know, small independent artists putting out their first or second album here. We're talking about the Bowies and the Beyoncés and the Taylor Swifts, the U2s, which we'll get to. These are guys who, they can afford to play this game because it is a game. Bowie, if he had been, if everything had gone according to plan, in 2001, he would have had the first surprise album because he was working on an album in 2001 called Toy. He didn't tell anyone he was recording it, aside from the people who were working with him in the studio. He didn't tell the label that he planned to just put it out without any sort of promotion and, you know, TV, whatever. But he wasn't really happy with the album, so he decided to shelve it. And it was actually released years after his death in 2021. But in 2013, he did get around to releasing surprise material, if not a whole album. He spent 2011 and 2012 working in secret with Tony Visconti and a bunch of other very talented musicians and producers. They all, again, had to sign NDAs. They all couldn't say that they were working with Bowie because at that point, everyone thought Bowie had retired. He's not going to play again. He's not going to perform again. He's not going to give us any new music. On his 66th birthday, on January 8, 2013, he put out a new single, a new video for Where Are We Now, and said, the next day, we'll be here in a month and a half, or 2 months, or something like that, in March. Just broke everybody. Everybody just stopped. I remember that everyone just stopped what they were doing and said, oh my God, Bowie has new material, and get this, it's actually pretty good. Because that's the big worry when someone drops a surprise material. Like Beyonce, like you think to yourself, oh, Beyonce has new material. Oh, she's not going to promote it. Oh, Lemonade, that's fantastic. It was the same with Bowie.
Yeah.
It was a huge commercial success. The single became his highest charting single since 1985. The album went to number 2 in America, number 1 in Ireland and England. Paid off again.
Like, imagine that is just such a... Watch me.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
And also, because I know we were talking a bit about, obviously, like Beyonce being in studio with people and making them sign NDAs the same way. Bowie obviously had to because he was off, you know, it was like, oh no, I'm not doing this anymore. But imagine working with like Bowie on that album.
Yeah.
Like the secrecy around it and being a part of it and being like, oh my God, this is going to be so class.
Yeah. It actually kind of reminds me, I was actually just thinking about that recently with the whole Oasis reunion. There had to have been so many people involved in the promotion of those gigs and the photography and everything setting up and all the secrets that they had to keep. I wonder, did these guys go home at night and do they say, I'm working with Bowie on something?
Yeah.
Who did they talk to? They have to talk to somebody.
I would not trust one member of my family because my family is too big and they always do this thing where they go, well, sure, we're telling ourselves. And I'm like, there's too many of you, and then one person will slip up, so I have to keep on everything.
I pretend I work in a different job altogether. I wouldn't be in for it.
Taylor Swift. Yeah. I mean, obviously this year was the year of Taylor Swift. You couldn't get away without talking about her, but she's an absolute devil for a surprise album, as she we is. Learned in the pandemic.
Yeah, it's weird. Before the pandemic, you might recall, Taylor Swift struggled to sell tickets for a second night in Croke Park.
I remember this vividly.
They were literally, I was offered free tickets to that gig.
I wasn't even working in 2FM and I was offered free tickets to the gig.
It's so strange. Like, you couldn't give them away. And then now, I think if she announced a gig in Croke Park, she could do a week, I'd say.
Easily.
But during the pandemic, she put out a surprise album, which apparently she hadn't told her label about at all. I have to wonder, someone had to have known about this.
They had to.
But she put out an album, Folklore, which kind of, you know, saw her transitioning into like a sort of a more mature folk sound. Or when I say more mature folk sound, that sounds a bit snobby. She picked up an awful lot of fans that wouldn't have listened to the pop stuff beforehand, despite it being fabulous music. But it was a change of direction. Also, a surprise album while the world was falling down around us from Taylor Swift. That's not such a bad thing.
No, so you take it.
So she decided to do it again 5 months later. She gave us a sister record to Folklore called Evermore. And that, I think, was the beginning of something special for Taylor Swift, because people couldn't go see her at the time. It's not as if she could go on TV to talk about this sort of thing. So she kind of just communicated with an awful lot of her fans through social media.
Yeah.
So people were kind of itching then to see her live. So the second, like, the world was back to normal, or, you know, as normal as we can get, and the you know, the Eras tour started, that's when I think Taylor Swift went from becoming this, you know, sort of like another global pop sensation to just a billion-dollar empire.
Yeah, and if we think about it, at the time we had the likes of, you know, Shake It Off in 22, and like, they were very poppy and they're fantastic tracks, but then when she came out with something like this, it's got a different vibe to it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's so gorgeous.
Yeah. And she's kind of kept it up. She obviously, we knew that Midnights was coming. We knew that the Torture Post Department was coming. But on the same day as those two albums released, she said, oh, and here's another one.
Yeah.
Here's the B-sides. But we're not even going to call it the B-sides. It's just two albums for the price of one. So she keeps it up. And I mean, some people have been saying, you know, is it too much Taylor Swift? I don't think there is such a thing as
Taylor
Swift.
No, I don't think there is either, because she's
music
a chameleon.
Is good.
Yeah, she can kind of do everything. And she's got something for everyone. And you can't be a Taylor Swift snob, because she's just very good.
No, and also, remember when we were teenagers and it felt like sometimes it did take bands like 3 or 4 years to follow up an album. I mean, we're doing pretty well.
You don't really have that time now, though.
No, you have to
stay churning out, because our attention spans are gone and there's something else coming in the woodwork and we forget about it. Yeah. So you have to be on the ball. Before we finish up, and I've enjoyed this so much, we have to talk about you too, because what is your take on Songs of Innocence?
So Songs of Innocence, in 2014, Bonham and the boys had this deal going with Apple where they were going to release Songs of Innocence on the same day around the world for free. So they were essentially going to add it to people's iTunes libraries without their permission. So technically, it was a surprise album, despite the fact that they told everyone that they were going to do it.
Also, can we point out as well, at that time, memory was a huge thing to have on your iTunes, and you weren't able to get rid of this.
Yeah.
So you had to, whether you liked it or not, it was there.
I know. I used to liken it to the Daily Mail on Sundays sometimes kind of giving away like an anniversary album release, or sometimes a new album. And the thing is, like, if you didn't like the album, you could bin it. With this one, if you tried to bin it, it just kept bouncing back. But there was uproar about it. And I remember Consequence of Sound writing at the time that maybe U2 had kind of overestimated the band's relevance with their fans. Many felt like the download constituted an invasion of privacy. Even Bono came out later and he said, there was a drop of megalomania there, maybe a touch of generosity. He admitted, we probably shouldn't have done it. I think, settle down. Even at the time, it was just U2 going, do you know what? Here, everybody have our album for free. We're quite proud of it. This is a new tool. We just want to try something new here. I think there's an awful lot you could give out about when it comes to Bono and the lads. Them giving away a free album is not one of them.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. But I was raging about the space at the time when I was trying to get, you know, a little bit of Missy Elliott and everything down. I was like, oh, I have no room left.
Yeah, and also getting rid of it and then seeing it just bounce back, that was a bit strange.
Nothing about it. There you have it, Chris. A surprise album might get a surprise reaction, but if it's still talked about 10 years on, it's doing better than most. Mm-hmm. That was arts journalist Chris Wazer and the power of a surprise album. Thank you so much for coming in with us today.
Thanks, Laura.
We'll be right back after these. 2FM.